case is number 23-13031, L Squared Industries Incorporated versus Nautilus Insurance Company. Finger, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether cleanup for new contamination at a petroleum site is covered under Nautilus's policies. More particularly, does the policy distinguish between pollution conditions so that you can have more than one pollution condition? Before turning to the policy, we need to bear in mind that 40 CFR 280.97 requires that the policy contain a certification that it covers sudden accidental releases, non-sudden accidental releases, or accidental releases from storage tanks covered under the policy. This policy, of course, does include that certification. And while the policy may contain conditions and exclusions, to the extent that the insuring agreement under the policy isn't interpreted to cover these accidental releases, then it doesn't meet federal requirements. The insuring agreement states that the pollution conditions must be first discovered during the policy period. Well, what pollution conditions? And it's clear from the insuring agreement that it's talking about a release, and that release, by definition in the policy, has to come from a covered underground storage tank system subsequent to the retroactive date of the policy. And by covered system, I mean one that's listed in the schedule to the policy.
Right. Your position, as I understand it, is that the evidence in the record, at the very least, creates an issue of fact as to when your client first discovered the leakage, because viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to your client, what existed before maybe could have been traced back to the 1985 discharge or problem and wasn't necessarily the result of a new leak, right?
Absolutely.
Tell me what the district court got wrong, you think.
I think they misinterpreted the policy. I think when they said, well, there were pollution conditions identified in the 2018 Taylor Environmental Consulting Report, that was the discovery. Well, a couple of things. One, that still occurred after the inception of the policy. But more importantly, at that point in time, Taylor said, I think this relates to the 2015 discharge. But the district court is saying, well, there are pollution conditions. Well, yeah, there are pollution conditions. Everybody knew there were pollution conditions from the 2015 discharge. And if you're going to interpret the policy to say anytime you have pollution conditions and then there's a subsequent release that adds on to the pollution conditions, you have global pollution conditions. And I think that's where the district court went wrong.
In your view, what the way to read the policy is to tie pollution conditions to a claim. And a claim can only be something that arises during the policy term plus the retroactive provision, right?
I would tie it to a release because you want to get it to, and I'm sure the insurance company wants to get it to, a discharge from the storage tank system that's scheduled under the policy, which, you know, this is a separate tank system than was at issue in 2015. The tanks were replaced. It so happens they were replaced in the same place. subsequent to the retroactive date. So I think, and even, Your Honor, if you look at the coverage limits provision in the policy, it talks about each pollution condition. So even there, we have Nautilus recognizing that there might be more than one pollution condition, and certainly the definition of a release shows that there may be more than one pollution condition.
The district court concluded that your client first discovered the leak and contamination before the start of the policy, right? Based upon one of the reports that had been prepared. Tell me what you think is incorrect about that analysis.
Well, the district court went back to 2017 and said...
Right, when people first looked at the potential problem.
Right. So 2017, the county inspector under contract to the state comes out, looks at the problem, says, hey, the boots around your sumps aren't tight. They either need to be replaced or repaired. And in the inspection report, he says, no evidence of a release. So the tank contractor repairs the boots, hires NGN consultants. NGN goes out. NGN says, all we see is the 2015 contamination. The department says, hey, you analyzed the wrong soil sample. You sent the wrong soil sample to the lab. Okay, the soil sample they sent to DEP was contaminated anyway. It was contaminated by the 2015 discharge, NDN thinks. And so it's almost no harm, no foul, but okay. And DEP isn't that concerned. They said, well, you know, we'll get to that. DEP then sends two letters to which the insured says, we never got them. And in fact, the letters are sent to an incorrect email address. And that's undisputed. And when DEP finally corrects the email address and sends us the warning letter, which we reference in the application to the insurance policy, sends us the warning letter saying, hey, this additional assessment's needed to finish up the tank closure report. You have to do a closure report if you repair or replace a component. Still no evidence of a release. DEP is still not saying there's been a release.
There's a report or document in the record, and I just want you to help me with it now because I can't place exactly who it's from or the date. But there's a report sometime in 2018 that says that it can't pinpoint, I'm paraphrasing, it can't pinpoint the 2017 discharge or problem to X, Y, or Z. Can you help me tell me what that was?
Your Honor, it's the August 16th, 2018 Taylor Environmental Consulting closure assessment for replacement of dispenser sump. And that's the document that the district court used to say that's when the insured discovered pollution conditions. But what the document says is...
But the policy period was...
July.
So this would have been within the policy period.
Correct.
So how did the district court say that that vitiated coverage?
I don't know if they did. I don't think they realized that. To be honest, I don't know how they got there. Now, what they also did was they said...
And I haven't gone back to look at everything in the record, so this is just a very on-the-top tentative view, is that, you know, at summary judgment, you've got to view the evidence in the light most favorable to you. And with regards to when your client first discovered this leakage, this report seems to be an indication that the first discovery was within the policy period and not before.
I would disagree that it's the first discovery. I don't think the first discovery occurred until 2019, because in this report, Taylor is still saying clean it up under the 2015 discharge. And why, I think
why does it harm you if that is the first notice, if that was within the policy period?
Well, I don't think it does, but that doesn't stop me from saying I still think it's wrong. I think we do even better.
No, I understand that, but what you're trying to do now is you're trying to avoid summary judgment, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so, you're right. The somebody's characterization of a document, mine, doesn't prevent you from arguing a different characterization of another document that's more beneficial to your client. So, but it just seemed to me that if that 2018, August 2018 report, you say it was from Taylor, refers back to the 2015 problem, I would think that at summary judgment that supports your position that you didn't first discover this before the policy period began to run.
Well, let me anticipate an argument. The sampling may have been done before the inception of the policy, but that sampling first gets to the insured in the August 16th, 2018 report, which is subsequent to the inception date. So I'm going to hedge my bets and say, I think it's 2019. But if knowledge depends on the insured receiving this report, then yes, it's subsequent to policy inception. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Warren.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Aaron Warren for Nautilus. Your Honors, we spent a considerable amount of time discussing, I think, sort of reasons one and two for affirmance, which is the first discovered and the somewhat the prior knowledge exclusion. I'd actually like to start with reason three, which is late notice, because it's the simplest reason for this court to affirm the district court order. And I'll then use the remainder of my time to address first discovered and prior knowledge in the federal regulations and any other questions the court may have along the way. LSI's only argument regarding notice is that prejudice is required. It's not. There's no prejudice requirement under Florida law in a claims made policy for breach of a notice provision. In our brief, we cite the Doctor's Company versus Health Management, where Florida's second DCA specifically addressed breach of a notice provision in a claims-made policy. In that case, it was a 60-day probable claim notice event. In this case, it's a 7-day notice provision. The 7-day notice provision is lifted directly from the federal regulations in this realm of storage tank releases. In this case, it's undisputed LSI.
Seven days from what? Remind me.
Discovery of condition of pollution that could lead to corrective action. And in this case, it's undisputed LSI, they just admitted, failed to report within 7 days of that August, of receiving the August 2018 Taylor report, which said, I don't know if this is from the 2017 discharge or the 1985 discharge. Either way, LSI needs to get out there and perform the remediation that the FDEP originally ordered in March 2018. It's undisputed that LSI waited over 8 months before notifying Nautilus. It's a clear violation of the policy's strict 7-day notice provision, and prejudice is not a factor. So unless this court is prepared to effectively overturn Florida law on this point, it can simply affirm on the basis that LSI breached the policy's strict 7-day notice provision.
Why isn't prejudice required for a claims made policy as opposed to an occurrence policy?
Well, I mean, that's just it, is that because notice is essential to defining the risk for a claims made policy. That's why the policy only costs $875. It's a claims made policy. Notice is essential to the risk. If LSI wanted more flexibility, it could have gone to the market and purchased an occurrence based policy.
Well, I mean, if we agree with you, we have to write an opinion that explains how notice works in the claims made context, right?
Correct.
So let me give you a hypothetical that's not this case. There's a breach of the 7-day provision, but the notice still gets provided during the claims made period. Is the insurer required to provide to show prejudice?
No, Your Honor.
Even though you've bought the risk during the claims made period. In other words, you say 7 days. Right, but let's right. say that the notice of conditions that could lead to coverage arise on the 30th day of a 1-year policy. Mm-hmm. They give you notice 14 days afterwards, not 7 days afterwards. Mm-hmm. You're still within the claims made period. Correct. Why wouldn't you be required to show prejudice as a matter of Florida law in that scenario when the claim is and the notice is given within the policy period?
I understand your question, and that's the doctor's company versus health management.
Right, I'm asking you why. I understand the case.
Right.
I want to know why that makes
sense. Oh, okay, right. It's because notice
is... I understand. Let me just interrupt. Sorry for interrupting you. I understand the argument if the notice is provided outside of the claims coverage period because the reason you pay less for a claims-made policy is you're not giving coverage into an unknown future, right? It has to be a claim provided or made during the policy period, so it costs less, right? There's less exposure. So I understand the argument about no prejudice if the notice gets provided outside of the claims made period. I'm not so sure about the notice within the claims made period.
Because notice is essential. It's critical to risk management. It's why the policy is rated and the premium is calculated on that basis. And it's particularly applicable in the realm of storage tank releases where time is of the essence for everything you do. The 7-day notice requirement of conditions indicating a new release. There's a 24-hour notice requirement when you actually know of a new release. I mean, so it's absolutely critical because otherwise you end up with another 1985 issue where you still have groundwater pollution at LSI's facility. So my answer is that notice is essential, critical feature of the policy, and that's why the premium is calculated the way it is.
No, but how are you harmed? I know this is circular. I know that case says you don't have to show prejudice, but how are you harmed by 1-day late notice in that scenario?
Well, there's...
In the claims made world, how are you harmed?
There's also... Well, yes, Your Honor, there could be all sorts of issues. Fines, penalties, the spread of the pollution, the increased cost of the remediation, the ongoing nature of it. Time is of the essence to get out there, to control the risk, to manage it, to define the scope of the pollution plume, and to get your hands around it and start cleaning it up. So, Your Honor, I'd like to... Unless you have any more questions, I'd like to move on to the first discovered provision, which is, of course, a separate basis to affirm the district court's ruling. So, again, for a premium of $875, LSI purchased a policy that only covers pollution that is first discovered during the policy period. Now, in our brief, we cited the court 9 or 10 examples of documentary evidence, of testimonial evidence that establishes the first discovery occurred at least 4 months before the policy and up to a year before the policy based on LSI's own admission. I'd like to just highlight a few of those reasons now. And starting in May 2017, when the FDEP came to LSI's facility, performed an annual inspection, found cracked piping boots and said that this equipment failure has or could cause a discharge or a release, you need to perform testing and determine whether a discharge has occurred. The testing is a hydrostatic test, which is a system tightness test, or soil sampling, which is the site check. In July 2017, hydro testing fails, indicating a new release. In October 2017...
Well, it doesn't necessarily indicate a new release. It indicates that there's a problem.
No, Your Honor. The FDEP said this equipment failure is of the nature that a failed hydrostatic test is indicative of a new release. That's literally in its May 2017 annual inspection. And so then on...
Go ahead.
So in addition to the failed hydrostatic, and they said if the hydro test fails, do a site check, sample the soil. They do, LSI does that. Soil sampling fails in October 2017. It reveals pollution 2 feet under the surface, directly adjacent to the cracked piping boots at the underground storage tank, confirming a discharge. Those results are sent to the FDEP. In March 2018, the FDEP, who's tasked with implementing the EPA's regulations, conclusively determines this is a new, distinct discharge. It instructs LSI to file a discharge report form for this new discharge, which LSI does a few days later, filling out all of the information voluntarily in that form, including the declaration that it first discovered the discharge in July 2017 when that hydro test failed. So, and there's no factual dispute with any of this. We deposed the FDEP. We deposed LSI. We deposed LSI's expert. Even LSI's expert says, we pressed him on this question, so this is a new discharge, but it's your opinion. It was first discovered in March 2018. Answer, correct. That's their own expert telling the court that the discharge was first discovered in March 2018, 4 months before the policy. LSI tries to avoid all of this by suggesting...
Can you tell me the effect, if any, of the Taylor report from August of 2018?
Well, yeah. So Taylor was out on the site to repair a sump at the fuel dispenser. The fuel dispenser is where customers pump gasoline into their vehicle. And the effect of it is that before this was sort of colored by the issue of insurance, Taylor reveals and is very revealing in that report that LSI filed a discharge report form in March 2018 regarding the soil contamination. He notes in it that LSI has still failed to perform the remedial investigation that the FDEP ordered. And he puts LSI on notice again that they need to do it. And so that's why if we indulge their fiction that this first discovered provision doesn't exist and the known pollution conditions exclusion doesn't exist, it's still an independent basis to deny coverage here because they were indisputably put on notice by their own expert of this issue. And so LSI's rebuttal to first discovered is they say, well, maybe first discovered is ambiguous. Problem with that is in March 2018, LSI had no issue with first discovered. LSI didn't think first discovered was ambiguous when it voluntarily disclosed that it first discovered the pollution in July 2017 when the hydro test failed. Conveniently, first discovered only becomes ambiguous when they need coverage. The fact of the matter is there's nothing at all unclear about what first discovered means. It's just as a district court held, first discovered means when the insured or the implementing agency is aware or should become aware of pollution requiring corrective action. This court has consistently affirmed or enforced.
And then puts the carrier on notice.
It puts, depending on what, if, first of all, it's not always an insurance policy that's the financial responsibility mechanism for a tank owner. Depending on what the words are, the terminology at the time, it could. If Nautilus insured the policy at that time, yes, the 2017 would have been first discovery. But, you know, Nautilus was a brand new insurer on the risk starting in 2018. So it does depend on the language. But, yes, Your Honor, if I would say if Nautilus was on the risk at that time, July 2017 would have been a first discovery that would have been required to be reported. And so because the contamination was discovered in March 2018 at the latest, and because LSI voluntarily admitted it first discovered this contamination in July 2017, the court should affirm on the first discovered limitation. But even if we set aside notice, even if we set aside first discovered, then we still win on the third independent basis, which is the known pollution conditions exclusion or the prior knowledge exclusion. So again, a premium of $875, LSI purchased a policy that doesn't cover conditions that LSI knows about before the policy incepted. This is an objective, the test is objective, it's amplified by the policy's application, so it means when LSI knew or should have known of discharge or a release at its facility.
Is there a huge overlap between that argument and your argument about first discovered?
In this case, yes, there is an overlap, but it's not.
Actually, there's an overlap. It may not be a complete legal overlap. But
that's
the fact
that
here you say that known or should have known is basically the same as first discovered. They merge in this case because of what you say the factual chronology is.
Yeah, that's correct, because LSI submitted the discharge report form. It admitted, it swore under penalty of law that it first discovered this condition at its property in July 2017. So yes, there is that overlap. And the additional evidence too is after they filed the discharge report form, the FDEP a day later said, okay, get out there and start remediating, start measuring the scope of this plume so we can get our hands around it. They followed that up with a warning letter in April 2018. LSI can't deny knowledge of pollution. It was actively ordered to remediate. LSI's rebuttal to all of this is that, maybe perhaps that this discharge was related to the 1985 discharge 40 years earlier. That's irrelevant. The known pollution conditions exclusion applies to all known conditions, regardless if they're linked to 85 or 2017. The exclusion, it doesn't turn on subjective knowledge. It doesn't turn on LSI's sincere but incorrect belief about the source.
Wait. Imagine a different case where there was a discharge of some kind in 1985 on a big property on the easternmost side. And then there's a new leakage because of some fracture in the boot or something like that on the westernmost side, which had not been previously contaminated, 40 years later. Does the known pollution exclusion in your mind bar the claim for the new leakage?
That was, if it's known before the policy incepted.
No, it's not, because in my hypothetical, it happens during the claims made period.
If there is no knowledge of a discharge, if there is no knowledge of a release, if it is a truly fortuitous accidental release that's first discovered in the policy and it's on the eastern side, yes, it's covered.
Okay.
Would the court like any? I know I'm out of time. I was going to address the federal regulations, but I don't need to.
You've got 30 seconds. I'll give you 30 seconds to wrap up.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
You know, there's a lot going on and you have a limited time. You can't cover everything in 15 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just say that the federal regulations, it's a red herring, it's a distraction that only obligates facility owners to demonstrate financial responsibility. It doesn't prohibit exclusions. It doesn't prohibit first discovery provisions. It doesn't prohibit notice requirements. At the end of the day, this case is about enforcing the plain language of an insurance policy LSI purchased. LSI had 7 days to report. It waited 8 months. There's no coverage on that basis. In addition, the court can affirm on the prior first discovered provision. And on top of that, the court can affirm on the known pollution conditions exclusion. LSI knew about this in March 2018. Thank you very much.
All right, Mr. Warren, thank you very much.
Let me address the prejudice issue and the late report. The case is cited by Nautilus as to claims-made policies all say that you can't extend the claims-made reporting period with a late report. In that circumstance, prejudice isn't an issue. The late report occurs because the policy period is over. In the case of a late report within a claims-made policy period, as we have here, the Klena case controls.
Which case?
Klena, C-L-E-N-A. It's Klena Investments, Inc. versus XL Specialty Insurance Company, 2012 Westlaw 100-4851, Southern District of Florida.
100-4851. Okay, you say control, but none of those cases control. I mean, that's a district court decision, which we can find persuasive, but it doesn't control. It's not a decision of a Florida appellate or Supreme Court. You just think it's persuasive.
It is construing Florida law, Your Honor.
I know, but it's not binding on
us. No. I appreciate it.
You said the word controlling.
I did. My error. Yes, it's persuasive, and I think it's...
What does that case say?
It says that in the event you have a late report, prejudice is assumed, but it's a rebuttal, is presumed, but it's a rebuttable presumption.
And that's in a claims made scenario?
I believe it was.
I mean,
but in the claims made cases, and I can give you other cases, Your Honor, with claims made scenarios. The CK Mart versus Mid-Continent Casualty Company.
When did your client provide notice to Nautilus?
3 days after it received...
The date?
August 16th, 2019.
Okay.
I think that's... I'm sorry, April 16th, 2019, Your Honor, which is 3 days after DEP's site initiation letter. And if I might, let me address the discharge reporting form.
You're over your time. Okay. I'll give you 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. The undisputed testimony from LSI was that they only filed a discharge reporting form because the local program required them to file it.
I know, but your expert testified, at least in part, that there was knowledge in April of 2018. Didn't he say that?
No.
What did he say?
He said there was knowledge of contamination. If he used the word discharge, I would find it difficult to believe that that wasn't picked up in cross of the expert.
Okay.
We've got to be careful about discharge, release, pollution conditions. And DEP, and this was a comedy of errors, and the DEP witness, throughout his deposition, the DEP witness is saying, well, I don't know why they did that. Well, I don't know why they did that. Speaking to the city of Jacksonville, who was running this thing at the beginning. But what DEP says is...
This is your last point, so make it
clear. Yes, Your Honor. Further determination will be required to establish if the contamination documented in the August 16, 2018 closure assessment report submitted by Taylor Environmental Consulting may be eligible or partially eligible for cleanup funding from the Inland Protection Trust Fund under the Early Detection Incentive Program. So here we are in 2019, and DEP is saying, hey, this may be eligible as part of our cleanup of the 2015 Early Detection Incentive Program cleanup. This is a year after Taylor's 2018 report.
Okay, we understand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
take your time setting up our final